recording here. Start my record.
This conference will now be recorded.
Okay. Okay, I want to thank everybody for coming, weathering the snow, and shoveling your cars out and everything. this shiur is titled L'saking Chayi Shah L'man Sheyarech L'Chayi Oilam. So imagine loyalenu. So if we learn about it, that should be a schus, that it should only be learning halacha v'loyal ma'ase. It should just be theoretical. The learning itself gives us a schus that we should never have to apply these halachas in a practical way. So we have two terms in halacha. We have a term chaye shah. Chaye shah literally means temporary life. Now we're going to have to define what's considered temporary. So temporary life could either mean because the person's life is in danger, or it could mean the person, God forbid, is terminally ill. All of these cases could fall under chaye shah. Obviously, none of us are going to live forever, and in a global sense, we're all living temporarily. We're not living eternally, but there's a category called chaye shah, which we will attempt to define as we go along. Then there's another term referred to as chaye olam, which means literally, it means eternal life, which obviously none of us are going to live forever in this physical world. But chaye olam, for the purpose of this discussion, the poskim use the expression a normal lifespan, a normal lifespan. So you have a person who his normal lifespan is jeopardized. He's either, God forbid, terminally ill, or he's in some other kind of sakana. And the question's going to be, could the person risk his temporary life in order for a chance to achieve eternal life, which means a normal lifespan? So the question is, are we allowed to put our temporary life in danger because it might not be successful in order to possibly achieve a normal lifespan? That'll be the topic of the discussion. So let's first discuss what's the status of someone who is a person of chaye shah. The person only has a few days to live, a person only has a few weeks to live, or the person only has a few minutes to live or a few seconds to live. Let's discuss what the status of that person is. So the Gemara in Yuma tells us, and we've touched on these Gemaras earlier in previous classes, the Gemara in Yuma tells us the sugya of Pikuach Nefesh, the sugya, the topic of violating the Shabbos in order to save, Pikuach Nefesh. So the Gemara says, Matsuhu Chai Mefachin. So the Gemara discusses if a building collapses onto someone on Shabbos. So of course we're allowed to go to whatever effort it takes, even on Shabbos, to save the person's life. And the Gemara says, even if you're not sure if there are any survivors or not under the collapsed building, you're allowed to start digging and violating Shabbos on the chance that hopefully we'll find someone there and be able to rescue the survivor. It's a rescue mission. So the Gemara tells us, if we find somebody who's alive, so we continue the search, we continue the dig, and we rescue the person. So the Gemara says, of course, matsuhu chai pshita. Of course, if the person's alive, it should go without saying that you continue digging. What's the novelty in that ruling? So the Gemara tells us, leitzricha d'afilu l'chayei shah. So the Gemara uses that expression, that the novelty of the ruling is, even though the person only has a few moments left to live. And this is brought in halacha, the Bir Halacha in Hilchos Aruch Hayim, in Hilchos Shabbos, he says, even if the person's a goses, even if the person is on is on his deathbed, he's been crushed, and the person only has a few more moments to live, if we can determine that shoveling him out will prolong his life for a few more moments, it's already worth it to violate the Shabbos. The Bir Halacha there explains, although we once discussed this, although one of the reasons given to violate Shabbos to prolong life is that that will enable the person to keep many more Shabbosos. We have that expression in the Chazal, that violate this Shabbos in order to enable the person to keep many more Shabbosos. And obviously in this case, we're violating the Shabbos just for a few more moments of life. And not only will this person not be able to keep other Shabbosos, he's not going to be doing that much of keeping even this Shabbos itself. So that is just like a rationale. It's just a midrashic interpretation. But the technical halacha, the letter of the law, is that we would violate the Shabbos to preserve life, even a few moments of life, even if there's no active observance of Shabbos as a result of that preservation. So that concept of let's violate this Shabbos in order to enable him to keep future Shabbos, that's a nice idea. It's a philosophy. It's an attitude. But that does not drive the halacha. The halacha is determined simply black and white. Are we saving the person? Are we extending the person's life even for a few moments or not? So that's the chiddush of the Gemara. Even chayisha, even if the person is only going to live for a few more moments, we still violate the Shabbos. We continue the rescue mission in order to preserve the few moments of life that this person has left. So we see from the Gemara that chayisha, this expression, the temporary life that the person has, even though he was mortally injured and he's not going to live that long, we still would violate Shabbos or Yom Kippur based on that. Because the chiyus of a shah is chiyusihi, because even a moment's life is life. And this is really a musr. This is really something that we can appreciate, the value of a minute of life. Like, we have so many opportunities, we have so many minutes of life. We're not going to live forever, but if we would count up the minutes in an hour, the minutes in a day, we have so many moments of life, and each moment of life is valuable. The Gemara tells us on the side that a person can acquire his whole eternity, his whole Olam Haba, b'sha'achas, in one moment. So the value of life is something that can never be, it can never be, it can never be overestimated, it can never be underestimated, I should say. It's something that we should value every single moment of life. The Gemara in Shabbos gives us a similar sentiment. The Gemara tells us, this is the Gemaras that discuss if a person loyaleinu passed away on Shabbos, so how do we deal with the dignity of the body? The Gemara tells us whether you're allowed to close the eyes of the body, whether you're allowed to straighten the person out or not, is the body muksa or not? But the Gemara tells us, beware. If the person is still alive and he's a goses, the person is breathing his last breaths. So hamatzim im yitzias hanefesh, if a person reaches over and closes the eyelids of a person who's comatose, the person is almost his last few moments of life, hareze shoyfech damim, that's an act of murder, because the slightest interaction with this person could snuff out the few moments that he has left. And the Gemara gives us a parable. Mashal l'ner shekavavo helechas. Imagine if you have a candle that's beginning to go out. It's flickering, like the Chanukah licht after a couple of hours. So the Chanukah licht, the flame, is flickering. So if a person puts his finger next to the flame, it could extinguish it entirely. So that's the parable, that once something is on its way down, the slightest interaction could accelerate the demise of that candle. So the same thing would apply to a person that's a goyses. So the chayesha, we see from here that even a moment of life is valuable. It's worth violating Shabbos over to preserve. And if a person snuffs out even a moment of life, the person's going to die anyway. But we snuff out a moment of life, the Gemara says that shlichas damim, that's actually an act of murder. So we have to realize the importance of what we're dealing with. We're dealing with life. Now, the Achroinim, in item Beis, the Achroinim, the poskim, they debate whether or not, imagine if you have a person that in the meantime is terminally ill, and the doctors determine that he doesn't really have a chance, but if we try this procedure, that might cure the person. But on the other hand, there's a risk that it could kill the person instantly. So how do we evaluate this? The person, let's say, has some life. He has some life left in his current state. He's going to live a few weeks, a few days, a few weeks, a few hours. He has life left in his current state. However, if we subject him to some procedure, to an operation or some procedure, then we have the possibility of restoring him back to his normal lifespan. However, we also run the risk of stuffing out the life that he has right now. So is the person allowed, so to speak, to trade in his chayesha for a chance to get the permanent, to get the normal lifespan of the person. Can a person trade in? Can a person put his chayei shoh at risk in order for a suffix for chayei olam? That's the question. Now, we can't take chayei shoh, we can't take it lightly, because we would be prepared to violate Shabbos to preserve chayei shoh. And if a person snuffs out the chayei shoh, that's an act of murder. So essentially what we're doing is, we're taking a few moments of life, which is a life, or a few weeks of life, we're taking a life, which is a life, which would be subject to murder and would be subject to pikuach nefesh, and we're basically risking it in order to achieve a normal lifespan. Are we allowed to do that or not? Now, in item gimel, this is my own contribution to this discussion, besides the Maror Mekomos that I found. I didn't find anybody making this analogy, but I think that this is like a glaring analogy. Remember, you'll recall that we had a shiur not too long ago. If a person is drowning, so am I allowed to risk my life to save the other person? Am I allowed to risk my life to save the other person? So there was actually an argument about that, depending on the chances, if it's 50-50, or what about if it's more likely that I will not be successful to save that other person than not? Am I allowed to risk my life in order to save that other person? So there was actually a debate about that. So the Hagoyis Maimonios, we had this in a previous shiur, he actually brings from a Yushalmi that one is obligated. He says you're obligated to risk your own life in order to save someone else. So you're going to end up saving him and putting yourself into sakana. And you're obligated to do that. That's what the Hagoyis Maimonides paskens, based on a story in Yushalmi. We covered that not too long ago. On the other hand, that halacha of the Hagoyis Maimonides and that Yushalmi is not brought in Shulchan Aruch, and the Sma says that it was deliberately omitted from the Shulchan Aruch because we don't paskin like that. Based on a different Gemara, a Gemara in Nida, in the Bavli, we paskin that one is not allowed to risk his life in order to save somebody else. If the chances are more likely that you will not be successful, if it's 50-50, there's a coin, you're allowed to do the heroic act and try to save the person. But if it's more likely than not, then you should not do it. You have to weigh it very seriously. That's how we paskin. So it's not so simple to trade in your life to put your life in danger in order to save somebody else. So this is my analogy. If we take the patient himself, imagine as if we're juggling two different lives here. We're juggling the chayei shoh that the person definitely has. This person has a few weeks to live. He's a chayei shoh. He has a life. It's a short lifespan, but he has a life. And the question is he allowed to risk that life for the chance of gaining a different life? So it's analogous to two people. Is one person allowed to risk his life in order to save his friend from certain death? So that might be an analogy. Am I allowed to risk a chayei shoh in order to save a permanent life? So it could be it's an analogy to that question. Maybe the Hagoyis Maimonides would say that it's obvious you could, and maybe the Sma would weigh in and say that you can't. That was my analogy. That's what one could think. So it's very interesting because usually we have application and we have not such clear sources. Over here, there's actually a Gemara that explicitly deals with this question. It's a Gemara in Maseches Avodah Zarah. This is item Dalet on the notes. There's a Gemara in Maseches Avodah Zarah. The Gemara in Maseches Avodah Zarah discusses all sorts of topics that have to do with idol worship, obviously what you're allowed to do, what you're not allowed to do. It also discusses the concept of an idol worshiper, what his status is. The Gemara says that they're chashud on Ritzicha. You should never seclude yourself with an idol worshiper because the pagan worship, they're suspect on murder. You should never seclude yourself. You shouldn't get a haircut from an idol worshiper unless you can see in the mirror. It's a whole discussion over there that back in the day, these idol worshippers were a pagan, they were a rough bunch, and a person shouldn't start up with them. So the Gemara says like this, a fascinating Gemara. Omer Rav Chista, Omer Rav Yochanan, Safik Chai, Safik Meis. Imagine if a person has a dangerous illness where he might survive and he might not. Now, this is not what we're discussing. We're discussing someone whose life is at risk. In other words, he's terminally ill, or the person is definitely only has chayisho. First, the Gemara tells us, what about if a person has an illness where it's doubtful if he'll survive? Maybe he'll overcome the illness, or maybe he won't. So the Gemara says, ein misrapin mohen. So the Gemara says there in Avodah Zarah, you're not allowed to submit yourself or to subject yourself to this idol worship doctor, right? There's a chance he'll live without the intervention. Do not submit yourself to an idol worship doctor. Rashi explains, a choili, you have a sick person. She'im lo yirpenu roifei, if he doesn't attend, if he doesn't go to the doctor, if he doesn't intervene, safek yechye safek yomus, maybe he'll live, maybe he'll die. Ein misrapin mehen, he's not allowed to subject himself to the non-Jewish, to the idol worshiper doctor. The oivid koychavim vandai kotilai, because it's almost for sure that the idol worshiper is going to kill him. Umutat shiyaniach ula yichya. It's like jumping from the frying pan into the fire. The person here is doubtful. Will he live? Will he not live? There's a chance he'll live. He's going to go now and admit himself to the idol worshiper hospital. In that case, he's certainly not going to make it. He's going to die. So it's like jumping from the frying pan into the fire. So Rashi says, don't go to the doctor. Maybe you'll live. Maybe you'll live anyway. Why put yourself, why decrease your chances of living? It's almost like it's a no-brainer. You're taking a 50-50 and you're reducing your chances of surviving by submitting yourself to the idol worshiper doctor. However, says the Gemara, Vadai Meis, if the person is definitely going to die without medical attention, then Misrapin Mehen, then he might as well submit himself to the idol worshiper doctor. And Rashi explains, she'im lo yirpe'enu, because if he doesn't go to the doctor, yomas, he's certainly going to die. Ve'ein kan Yisrael araposo. So Rashi explains, we're obviously speaking about a case where you don't have a normal Jewish doctor, trustworthy doctor. So the oivik kuchava may oved like, because what's the worst case scenario with the idol worshiper doctor? What could the idol worshiper doctor possibly do? Habalav hachi mayis. We're discussing a case where he's definitely going to die without the medical attention. So you're not losing anything by submitting yourself to the care of the idol worshiper doctor. Asks the Gemara. So the Gemara literally asks this question. Ve'oiki chayisha. What do you mean, what does he have to lose? He has to lose the few days of life that he has left. How is he allowed? How can the Gemara encourage him to submit himself to the care of this idol worshiper doctor where he has a few days to live? Rashi says he has a day or two to live, and he's going to subject himself to the care of the idol worshiper, where the idol worshiper, chances are, is just going to deliberately kill the person. how can you lose the chayisha? So the Gemara says an astounding thing. L'chayisha lo chashina. So I bolded the type. L'chayisha lo chashina. That we are not concerned with chayisha. Temporary life is not the kind of a life we have to concern ourselves with, and therefore you're allowed to subject yourself to the idol worshiper doctor. So I don't know what the statistics were, how trustworthy these idol worshiper doctors of old were, these witch doctors, whatever. But let's say, for argument's sake, 75% chance they're going to just kill the person with their antics, or 25% maybe it'll actually work. Or maybe the chances are even higher. Maybe it's 80% to 20. Maybe it's 90% to 10. So the Gemara says, this person only has a few more days to live. He's going to subject himself to this voodoo doctor, this idol worshiper doctor, and for the 10% chance, because what do you have to lose? He's going to die anyway. Asks the Gemara, what do you mean, what do you have to lose? You have to lose those few days that the person has left. And if you subject yourself, chances are you're going to lose those 2 days. So the Gemara explains, chayisha wei chashina. We don't concern ourselves if it's only a temporary life. Go for it. Take the risk. Maybe, who knows, 10% chance, 5% chance, maybe he'll save you. So it's kedai, it's worth it to give up, to jeopardize the chayisha in order to have the few percentage points that you might end up winding up better than you were before. So Tosfos asks there the obvious question, but what about the Gemara in Yuma that we started with? How can you be so cavalier with the chayisha? What does that mean? We don't concern ourselves with chayisha. Doesn't the Gemara say that we're prepared to violate Shabbos to preserve the Chayisha? Doesn't the Gemara say that a goses, somebody who's on his deathbed, if you merely intervene and touch the person and you snuff out whatever moments of life he has left, it's an act of murder? So how are you allowed to subject yourself to, how could the Gemara say that we're not concerning ourselves with the Chayisha? So Tosfos there gives the answer that it's all relative. It's all relative. We always take the alternative route. We always try to go for the better. We go for what's better. So let's talk about the Gemara in Yuma. The person has a few moments left of life. So you're going to say, don't bother violating Shabbos to save the person, but then the person's going to die sooner, right? So we would rather preserve whatever there is here to preserve rather than forsake the rescue mission and allowing the person to die sooner. So we do concern ourselves if it's for the benefit of the Chayisha. On the other hand, in this case, if we don't subject ourselves to the idol worshiper doctor, so then the person will for sure die. So then the argument goes, then the logic is, on the contrary, let's risk it in order to save the person. So we have both ways. It's relative. Chayisha is relative. We preserve it, we try to save it, but on the other hand, we can gamble with it in order to try to achieve Chayi Olam, in order to get back our normal lifespan. It's in the middle. Chayi Shah is somewhere in the middle. We have to preserve it, but it's something that we can trade in to get the Chayi Olam. That's what the Gemara says, and that's how Tosfos explains it. Now, what's the proof that we are not concerned with Chayi Shah, that we're allowed to gamble, so to speak, with the Chayi Shah, in order to achieve Chayi Olam, in order to achieve a normal lifespan? So if we look back at the end of item Hay, the Gemara tells us, the Gemara refers us to the story of Elisha and Gehazi. So we're not going to go into the whole story now. Elisha cursed Gehazi that he should become a leper and have to be excommunicated. He'll have to leave the city. So Gehazi spent the rest of his life wandering outside the city. He actually had, and it was an eternal curse. So he had three sons, each had this leprosy that they forever were outside the city. Now, in the times of the Tanakh, we're discussing a case where there was a famine, and everybody was at risk of dying of hunger. So Elisha, he prophesied that Hashem is going to save the nation, and he's going to provide food miraculously. There was a man there that was doubting, how is it possible? There's a famine. It hasn't rained for months. Even if it would downpour today, it would be impossible. We're going to get to that. It's impossible that it shall rain and food will grow in time. So Hashem created a miracle. Hashem created that there was a tremendous noise, like a miraculous noise of an army. And then there was a city of Aram, where everybody forsook the city because they were scared of the army coming in, even though there was no army. But the noise, there was an illusion of an army. So they all deserted the city. And there was an empty city that was laden with silver and gold and even an abundance of food. For some reason, Aram had food. Now, these lepers, these four people that were wandering out, they didn't know that. They didn't know that the city was deserted. So they made a simple calculation among themselves. They said, if we sit here outside the city, we're going to die of hunger for sure. How many days left do we have? So the Rambam actually says that if a person takes an oath that he's not going to eat, so if he swears that he's not going to eat for 1 day, 2 days, 3 days, 4 days in a row, he has to keep the oath because the oath is binding. But if he swears that he's not going to eat for 7 days, that already is considered a nonsensical shvua. It's considered to be just a shvua shav. It's just considered to be an immediately nullified shvua, and he's allowed to eat immediately because it's impossible to survive for 7 days. So chances are these lepers, they were scavenging for food once they realized that they don't have any food. So they made a simple calculation. If we continue wandering outside, we're going to certainly die. We have a couple of days left, 7 days, let's say, at the most, before we're going to die of starvation. Let's go and raid the city of Aram and risk getting killed by going into the enemy city behind the lines, and we'll try to find food. So they didn't know that Hashem performed the miracle, that the city was deserted. So in the meantime, we see from Gehazi and his sons that they were prepared to risk the few days that they have left before they die of starvation in order for the possibility, the remote possibility of being victorious over the city of Aram and finding food and being able to sustain themselves. So the Gemara actually proves from the story in Nach of Gehazi, the lepers, that they were willing to risk their lives in order to go into the city, that you're allowed to sacrifice, you're allowed to gamble with the Chayisha in order to achieve Chayo. That's the proof. So this is actually, this Gemara is actually brought in Halacha. I wanted to point out, I was being Mavis Sedra this week, and it's fascinating because it's actually a Rashi in this week's Parsha, in Parshas Miketz. So Rashi says that Yaakov Avinu didn't want to risk sending Binyamin, because Binyamin was young, and traveling could be dangerous for Binyamin. The Satan is Makatrik Bishasa Sakana. So he doesn't want to send Binyamin. Yehuda tells his father Yaakov a simple calculation. If we don't go back to Mitzrayim, then we're going to die of starvation. So it's better to put ourselves into suffic danger and leave the definite dying. So it's Mamish Rashi in this week's Parsha, and it's all based on the Gemara in Avodah Zarah. This Gemara is brought lahalacha in Yoredeya Kufnun Hei Halacha Aleph, quote, Komaka v'choyle sheish v'hem sakana, any serious illness that is considered to be a suffix sakana, that you would be mechal Shabbos, e misrapin yu'evik echavim, you're not allowed to subject yourself to an idol worshiper doctor. Now, none of us ever heard of this halacha. We go to non-Jewish doctors all the time. We even go to non-Jewish doctors for elective surgery. Forget about sakana. We even subject ourselves, we put ourselves to the knife, even if it's not for critical life-threatening issues. That's because the Shulchan Aruch clarifies, she'enu mumcha l'rabim. It's only if the person is not a certified doctor. If the person's a certified doctor, especially today, you have malpractice, you have his reputation on the line, you have the reputation of the hospital. So no doctor, even if he is a pagan idol worshiper, no doctor in his right mind would deliberately harm his patient. He doesn't want to ruin his reputation. He doesn't want to be sued for malpractice. So any doctor who's not a mumchel rabbi, he's not certified. We're talking about some voodoo doctor in a village somewhere where the doctor could kill the person without having to report to anyone. Then the Shulchan Aruch brings, you're not allowed to subject yourself to such a doctor because he's going to kill you. Afilu hu safik chai safik meis, even if it's a critical condition where the person might live, he might not. Well, as the Gemara says, you cannot subject yourself to the doctor. However, if the person will certainly die without the care, then he's allowed to subject himself even to such a doctor because chaye sha loy chashinan beha. Because in this kind of case, even though the chances are remote that the doctor is going to be helpful, you're allowed to risk your chaye sha in order to for the chance of getting chayav. The Shvus Yaakov, that's brought in the Pisrei Tshuva in Yoredeya Shin Lamentes, he actually speaks out this case. He says there was once a chayla who chala es chalyoy, so he's in his terminal illness, he's about to die. All the doctors assessed that he's definitely going to die within a day or two, and that's actually the expression that Rashi brings in the Gemara in Avodah Zarah. However, they assess that there's one chance that he can be cured. Now that's a critical expression. There's a chance he'll be cured. It's also possible the opposite, that if he takes this refuah, if it's not successful, chas v'sholom, he will die immediately within an hour or two. So this is mamish our question. The case was the person has 2 days of life left. He's going to subject himself to this far-fetched cure. It might kill him instantly. On the other hand, it might restore his life. Is it permitted or not to do this refuah? Are you choishish v'chayisha, or should we be passive and let nature take its course? That's the question of the Shlus Yaakov. So it's very interesting because the Shlus Yaakov says, if we look at the question objectively, he would be scared to intervene because chayisha is something that you can be considered a murderer if you snuff out the chayisha. But then the Shlus Yaakov brings the Gemara in Avodah Zarah that if it's possible to be cured, you're allowed to risk the chayisha in order to achieve the normal lifespan. And the same thing is brought in the Sefer Teras Adam to the Ramban. We've quoted the Sefer Teras Adam from the Ramban in earlier classes regarding the liability of a doctor. So says the Ramban, pirish lesvega the chayisha mikamei de esher the chaytuva. If it's a question of risking the chayisha in order to achieve even the remote possibility of living a normal lifespan, moicheshi. And the conclusion there is that we need haskamas roiv deyos. We need so we're going to deal with all these questions that are being posed. I see people are sending questions. We're going to deal with all these issues. The Shvus Yaakov concludes that this needs the haskama of roiv deyos, and the Poskim say you have to get like a second opinion. We have to determine there are two things here we have to determine. Right, we're dealing with a patient who has a chayisha. He has a few weeks, days, weeks left. There are two things we have to ascertain. Number one, is the person terminally ill, right? If the person has a chance to live, then we would not be allowed to jeopardize whatever life he has left. That was what the Gemara says, that if the person has a suffix, he can't subject himself, he can't submit himself to the idol worshiper doctor. It's only if he's definitely going to die. So question number one, we have to ascertain that the person will definitely die without the medical intervention. That's one. Number two, we have to ascertain, is there really a chance, because we can't snuff it out unnecessarily, is there really a chance that this procedure will be beneficial even if it's a remote chance? These are the two critical issues that have to be determined with the haskama, with the agreement of all the doctors. It's not practical to go to a million doctors, so probably what it means is to get the assessment of the team, of the doctor, a second opinion. We have to ascertain two things. Is the person definitely going to die? Because we cannot risk snuffing out a life if there's a chance the person will live without that intervention. The person has to be terminally ill. Point number two, there has to at least be a remote chance that this procedure will be helpful, will be beneficial, will be successful. Those are the two things that the Shlus Yaakov insists that we have to ascertain. Now, what's considered chayesha, right? Because imagine if the person is going to live for 20 years, right? Imagine if you have someone with some genetic disease where he's going to live for 20 years. It's a shortened lifespan. Are we allowed to risk that lifespan for a remote possibility? So probably not. There has to be some point at which we say that's not chayesha anymore. That's just a normal lifespan. At what point do we say that it's chayesha and that we're able to gamble with the chayesha? And at which point do we say that that's already considered a full-fledged life? So Rashi in Avodah Zarah, as mentioned earlier, says that he has a day or two to live. And that was also the case that the Shlus Yaakov gave us, that Chayesha, the example in question, was a day or two. Now, some people say, I mentioned this before, from the story of Gehazi, that they probably had more than that. They had, the Rambam says that only fasting for 7 days is life-threatening. But just for a few days, a person could, generally speaking, could survive that. So Gehazi probably had more than just a day or two to live, and they still were willing to risk their lives entering the enemy city of Aram. They didn't know that the city was miraculously deserted. The Achiezer, and this was the great Rav Chaim Oizer, we once quoted him before. The Achiezer says that the Svara Pshuta, and this is an item test, the Svara Pshuta, it's obvious to him, that there's no difference in Chayesha between a few days, like Rashi says, or even a few months. And the case in question from Rav Chaim Oizer Grudensky Zatzal was that there was a patient where the doctors gave him 6 months, and Rav Chaim Oizer allowed him to risk the 6 months of life that he has for a remote possibility to restore himself to a normal lifetime, even 6 months. Rav Moshe Feinstein in Yoredeya Chelik Gimel Siman Lamed Vav says that Rav Chaim Oizer, he was the master. We can't add on the Chaim Oizer. We can't take anything more. He's like the master. If he says 6 months, then we can't allow more than that. However, Rav Moshe Feinstein felt comfortable saying that 6 months, there's no precedent in halacha that 6 months is considered like a category. But we do have a precedent that a year, up to a year, is considered a category unto itself. For example, an animal is said to be a treifa. The Gemara tells us that a treifa loichai, a treifa will not live. That means that the animal will not live more than 12 months. So we find that chayesha is categorized as 12 months. So it's basically progressing here. Rashi threw out the number a day or two. Most of the poskim say that there's no basis that Rashi is saying that literally. We have a precedent from Gehazi with the fasting, the famine, probably even more than that. We have Rav Chaim Oizer says 6 months. Rav Moshe says that we can feel comfortable extending that to a year because we find the halachic precedent that a year, less than a year, is a chayisha from treifa. He also gives another, he has another rationale. This might be subject to change, that medical knowledge is not accurate enough to say. If a doctor says that a person has more than a year to live, then who knows? Maybe he'll have a number of years to live. It's not as if the doctors can tell the future. If the doctor could say, we only give him a few weeks, a few months, chances are they're right. A miracle could occur, but chances are they're right. But if they already say that he can live for more than a year, 2 years, then maybe he can live for 10 years, right? So we can no longer base the halachic decision on the doctor's assessment once the doctor himself is not sure how much more time the person has. So we only give up until a year. Now, this is the question people were asking. Is a person obligated to subject himself to this risky surgery if he has a chayisha? What if a person says, I would rather live out my last few weeks at home in the comfort of my home? You know, this is something that happens all the time. If, God forbid, a person is in the hospital and they're terminally ill and they can subject themselves to all of these super interventions, should the person subject himself to that? I don't want to do that. I want to go home. I want to be with my family. Is the person obligated to subject himself to these things or not? Rav Moshe Feinstein says that we don't have a proof either way, but in Svara, so this is where we're relying on the Das Torah, we're relying on the Das of our Poskim, in Svara, if the chances are that it'll be successful, if the chances are more likely than not, let's say 60-40, that it'll be successful, then Rav Moshe feels the person is obligated to subject himself to the treatment. You can't just say that a person, I don't want to go through the tsar of the treatment. The person has to go through and take the risk. If it's an acceptable risk, the person is required to subject himself to that refuah. However, once it's 50-50, or certainly if it's 60-40, that it will not be successful, then Rav Moshe Feinstein feels that a person is not required to risk whatever time he has left for the possibility of cure. He's allowed to just let nature take its course. But if the chances are more likely than not that it will be successful, then Rav Moshe Feinstein felt that it was an obligation, it was incumbent on the person to do the necessary hishtadlus to live out his normal lifespan because of the value of the life. Now, Rav Moshe Feinstein says, even if it's a remote possibility, the person would be allowed to risk his chayisha. And Rav Moshe Feinstein says something astounding. he makes a point. How could the Gemara prove from Gehazi? After all, Gehazi wasn't a tzaddik. Gehazi, because of the story in Nach, he was cursed by Elisha. He was forced to live outside the city. Who says that his decision was halachically valid? It's quoted in the Nach. But how can we rely on Gehazi? Gehazi decided to make a commando mission into a city to steal food. So we can base our halachic decision on that a person is allowed to subject himself to a remote possibility of success and give up his chayisha. So Rav Moshe Feinstein has a fascinating observation here. It must be that we're not proving from Gehazi. Gehazi is not our Moreh Derech. It must be that the Gemara understood that chayisha is something that we're loichashin and we don't concern ourselves with, and chayisha is something that we can gamble with the chayisha. It must be the Gemara understood that from the onset. Now the question is, but is it something that the average person would do? Is it considered reckless, or is it something that the average person would do? Is it reasonable to risk a chayisha in order to achieve chayi olam? We're not proving a halachic decision for Gehazi. He was just a regular person who decided to make a commando mission into this city to try to steal some food. We can't decide a halachic question. The premise we know, is it reasonable or is it reckless? The fact that these four men were prepared to do it, it shows that it's a reasonable decision, and therefore we can decide that would be a reasonable decision. And Rav Moshe Feinstein compares the chayisha. He says there might even be different personalities. Like when it comes to investing, it's fascinating that he gives this mushel. Some people, they invest their their retirement, their nest egg. Is that the expression? They invest their money aggressively and they want to have dividends, and it's a more aggressive investment where they have a chance to lose whatever they have. And some people have a more conservative investment. So just like when it comes to the person's life savings, one person will invest it recklessly, and the other, I shouldn't say recklessly, one person will invest it aggressively and the other person will invest it more conservatively. And they both can be said to be legitimate ways of investing the money. Depends what you want, depends what your level of how prepared you are of your temperament. So the same thing applies to the Chayei Shah. And that's what we're proving from Gehazi. So if it's more likely it'll be successful, then one should risk the Chayei Shah. If it's more likely that it won't, or it's 50-50, then Rav Moshe says you're not obligated to, and he compares it to spending. This is based on people. It's fascinating that for a few shiurim already, we've discovered this concept that danger or the value of life is subject to how people look at it. It's almost like we have to be very careful with this concept. We have it here. To what extent is it worth it to risk the Chayei Shah? That's based on people's hashara, people's feeling about it. It's something that's given over to people. We had this earlier. What's considered Shomer Pesoyim Hashem? This was the first shiur of this topic. What's considered an acceptable risk? Right, so that's based on what people consider. And then we also discussed, we mentioned it earlier, risking your life to save another. So also there's a certain acceptable risk that's up to people to decide. So it's fascinating that these things are given over to Das Bnei Adam. The question was asked, is a person allowed to risk his life, a Chayei Shah, to improve the quality of life? So there is a discussion about this, but Rav Moshe Feinstein felt very strongly that it would be forbidden to do that if a person is even if the person is terminally ill, or even if the person it doesn't have that much longer to live, to undergo a risky procedure just to improve the quality of life, that we don't have a halachic precedent that you would be allowed to risk the Chayei Shah, if it's for sure going to help, there's no question. But to risk a Chayei Shah just for the purpose of improvement of life, that Rav Moshe Feinstein felt was usher. So I ended the class here. I wrote in my notes that Yehi Ratzin, that HaKadosh Baruch Hu should cure all the Chayli Yisrael from Herev Yomeinu. And by learning about these important issues and these very heavy issues, we should be zeich, it should serve as a schus for us that we shouldn't have to have these questions lamaisa and only in an abstract or theoretical way.
Okay. This conference is no longer being recorded.
Yashikoyach, everybody.
Yashikoyach.